session number 22362, Reel 1.
Raimundo Revuelta, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Amorebieta, Bilbao, Spain.
Which year was this?
1931.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family background, about your mother and father and family, please?
Yes, there were seven boys and two girls in the family. My mother was a hard-working person. My father was in the army, and he was a general in the army against Franco. Unfortunately, got shot because we lost the war. But we were evacuated then into England in a ship called the Habana.
Before you go on to your evacuation, what are your memories about living in Spain?
Yeah, well, memories living in Spain at the time was, I remember running an air raid, running down towards the railway tunnel, because the German place were machine gunning us in the street, and I actually got shot in a leg, a ricochet bullet. And I was only, what, 5 and a half-ish? And we had to the tunnel. I remember a commotion in the bridge in Bilbao, virtually opposite the Ayuntamiento, the town hall. And I remember there seeing somebody stabbed because the Franco planes, the German planes were flying overhead. Woman was cheering him on. And they turned on her and stabbed her and threw the body over the bridge. I remember that distinctly because one of the women was my mother. She was one of them. She was selling fish on the bridge in the stall, see? And that I remember. I do remember air raids and fighting, but I can't be very clear as to when and what. Because soon after that, they sent us to England on the ship called the Habana, 5,500 children. Yet.
But your father was a general?
Yes, he got executed, he got shot.
Do you know anything about his execution?
No, I can remember vaguely, because I was only a youngster, you know. But my brothers told me that, yes, we did watch the execution. They made you watch it. So
he was a professional army general?
Yeah, well, I remember lying in bed with him soon before. And there was my father on the right-hand side, me in the middle, my mother on the left-hand side. And I remember distinctly, he sat, he's still in uniform, dressed up. And he was like lying on the bed, if you know what I mean. And I remember looking and seeing his revolver on his side, in the leather holster. And I took it out. To the other, and I was looking, admiring, and he went mad when he woke up. He said, "Give me that gun, leave me alone," you know. And I remember that distinctly. And after that, hell was breaking loose, and I don't remember much about it at all. Yeah.
How did you and your family get on with the other people who had a different political opinion?
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. I don't know how the people had a different opinion. I mean, the royalists. I mean, because I can't remember even meeting or mixing with them. With me, I mean, we were what we were, and we keep to our own sort of thing. I wouldn't have been able to pick out the royalist to the Republican. And I wouldn't certainly approach him. I'd kick his head in or something. You know, about them days, I was just a kid.
What was your address when you lived in Spain?
I am not sure. I know I was born in Calle Carmen. I lived in Calle Carmen in Amorebieta. And when I went to get my real birth certificates for my... I asked him in the registration, you know, in births and deaths, like we have in England, and I said, "Where was I born?" And they said, "Calle Carmen." And I said, "It's just around the corner." I said, "Well, what number?" Because I was interested, I'd have bought the house. You with me? And he said, "It wasn't a number, it was a block of flats. It was an apartment, and the postman would put your by name in your letterbox, your mum's letterbox, you see?" So, I've got no actual recollections of that.
What was the name of the street where you were wounded?
I couldn't tell you. I mean, I was 5 years old. running down the street for help, you know. Run, I'm going to run, you know. I'm going to go into a railway tunnel. We had no shelter, man, really. He ran for the railway tunnel. I know I was wounded there, definitely. And then when I came to England, I was my leg was up here, like, with a crutch, like, you know, when I came. But I remember when we did leave Bilbao in Santurce to come to England on the ship called Havana, and all these 5,000 children. And I was crying like mad. I didn't want to go. And then, because I wanted to take a rabbit with me to England. And my mother gave me a rabbit to take to England. I don't know, I suspect they had it on the boat. I don't know. But I remember that I was crying. I don't want to go. I want to take my rabbit with me. So my oldest brother said, well, let him have it for goodness sake, you know. And that is it. Next thing I know, we land in England.
You were telling me earlier about how you had to change your date of birth in order to be able to come to England.
Yes, because you had to be, you couldn't be under six, you couldn't come. So my date of birth was altered, right, so that I would have been six, you follow me?
And what was your true date of birth?
My true date of birth is 29th of the 11th of 1931, which is in all my documents now. Okay? But for years and years, I thought it was the 11th of January, you see. And when I fill in forms in, even when I, after I got my real birth certificate, and you're applying something for an office or for a job or something, date of birth, and you say, oh no, I got it wrong, you know. They must have thought I was stupid, not my mum's date of birth. They confused me, switching half stream sort of thing, you know. And, but I can't remember too much about them days in Bilbao. I remember certain bits and round, a lot of fighting, a lot of explosions and all the rest of it. But, I mean, when they bombed Guernica, we all knew they were bombing Guernica. And funny enough, the Guernica, the church was left standing, and the town hall was left standing. Everything else went down. And, no, there was the one school as well, but the rest was flattened. And I know that for a long, long time after that, till Franco died, he used to go out to Juarez de Vil, patrol Guernica. And he just might have picked up a brick for souvenir choo-choo. And they were there to stop looters, you follow me? And that's about all I can remember for that. All my memories are here now when I was a kid and living in the Spanish orphanage.
Did the ancestors of your father and mother also come from Bilbao area?
Well, my father originally came from Santander. That is where the Revuelta name is quite famous. We go to Santander, which we used to go there a lot, on route to my villa. We used to go from Plymouth or Portsmouth in the winter to Santander and drive down through Burgos, Madrid, Albacete to Torrevieja. But if you're driving through Santander, you see Revuelta this, Revuelta that, or the canning factories and that. You know, it's quite a, you say definitely Revuelta is a Santander name, and Pinheiro is a Bilbao name.
Does Revuelta mean revolution?
No.
What does it mean?
Revuelta is to return. I mean, some people, Revuelta is like turning an omelette over. Are you with me? No, it is just a name. It's just a name, Revuelta. It's like Smith in England used to be once upon a time. You know, it's a joke about Smith, wasn't it? You got a hotel and you sign Mr. Smith, they look over their glasses. But Revuelta, yes, it's quite a popular, not famous, but quite a popular name.
And at home, did you speak just Spanish, or did you speak any Basque language?
No, I never spoke Basque, Spanish, Castellano. See, the true Spanish language is Castellano. You can get Basque, you can get Catalan, and you can get Valenciano, so forth, but the true Spanish is Castellano. Now, when I went to the museum, the other day, this young man who showed us round, his first question to me, do you speak Castellano? He said, do you speak Spanish? So she said, naturalmente, I was like, and then we got talking in Spanish, you see. But I was delighted. He said, do you speak Castellano? Not do you speak Basque, or do you speak anything else, or Spanish? So that is the true language in Spain is Castellano.
So when you went in the ship, were you the only one from the family, your family?
No. I've got a little photo somewhere in a bit of newspaper with four of the five boys when we in England. I can't put my hand on it now, but I know I've definitely got it. And it's just Jesus, Jesus, Pedro, José Luis, who's the oldest one, Javier, and myself. And then we had another sister come with us, Rosa. Raquel, my youngest sister, was too young to come. She now lives in Malaga. And she married a chauffeur who at one time was a chauffeur to the Queen of Spain. And then he had a valve put in his heart, not a valve, a pacemaker put in his heart. And then he had to leave the job, see.
So can you remember anything about the voyage and what you took with you?
No, I had not took a rabbit with me. And the voyage, just a lot of sick and vomiting, and obviously, you know. But that part is a little bit blank. But I remember landing in England, in Southampton. And we know the pier we landed, because they took us there in Eastleigh, where the big tents were, to house their spast children. It's a big field donated by a local farmer. And they had all these tents, and we lived in tents. And a few years ago, we were invited to Eastleigh in Southampton, hosted by the town hall, to have a professional playwright that wrote a play about us, the Spanish children. And this is a piece of record in Eastleigh. We came from everywhere. Even came from Spain, even. The people who went back even came from Spain. Because after the wars, a lot of people went back to Spain. But only they could find your mother or your father, you see. And with mine, I don't know, couldn't find them. My mother went to hiding to France for many, many years. And last time I saw her, she was back in Spain in Valladolid, and she had a husband who was a taxi driver. But for many years, you weren't even allowed to go back to Spain. I mean, my brother said, you'll never go back to Spain because we're not allowed in there, you see. And then apparently, from what I gathered, that Franco had to pardon our family, the mother. You with me? And then she went back. And then we went to see her. But she's dead now anyway. Can't think any more about her there. When we landed in Southampton and we got off the boat or the Havana, by the way, on the way back from taking the children off in the Havana, Franco sank it. Before he got into Spain, he sank it. The banner went down the bottom of the sea. But then we thought, oh my goodness, look, they must work with lovers. Look, the old buntings and flowers and everything. Oh, decorated the streets. And we thought it was for us. It was for the coronation. It was 2 weeks after the coronation, you see. We thought, yes, they're working with us, you know. Went from there straight into a camp where nobody knows about this. But this again is on record. If you want to check it through, this the town hall in Eastleigh. When we're in this, imagine all these children, thousands of children under tents, and I think we're there for 3 weeks. Then they split us up and went to other camps. But cholera actually broke out in that camp. Cholera broke out because the hygiene conditions were so bad. You know, hole in the wall, hole in the floor, two plugs across there and lean over it, so, you know. And the doctors tackled it, but the government never found out that we had cholera there, because they'd have thrown us out of the country. But that was, I didn't know until I went to Eastleigh for the reunion, the 50th anniversary reunion, I think it was, it wasn't before that. But they invited us all down there. We were in the Post House Hotel, and this is when it came out into the play that this author had written. They gave us all a folder each, you know, with everything in it. And damn me if I can remember what happened to mine. Can't remember at all. But I know a lot of the boys in London have still got theirs. But cholera did break out. And where the camp was for all the children on the tents, it's now like industrial estate. I know Tesco's is there, because I used to go to Bournemouth, I still do, to go see my brother, with my only remaining brother now. And we go past, I said to Abby, look, I wonder, I want to go in there, into Eastleigh, into the camp, you know. And you can see Tesco's is the main sign you see on the right-hand side, you're going in. But my brother Javier, the only one I got left now, he became very, very famous and wealthy. And he actually lived in America, went to America, lived in America. And then his daughters wanted to come back to England, so they all live in England now. She just had a born with Wimborne Firm.
What season of the year did you arrive? Was it winter or summer?
It's May. 23rd of May, 1937. That I do know. Yeah, because that was on my registration certificate, you know.
What were your first impressions of England?
I'll be honest, I had no impression at all. We just saw all these bunting and all these flowers and the decorations, and we thought they were for us. But then reality sets in, isn't it? You're hustled onto a bus and you're taken up to a dirty big field, you know, which is now just off the M27. And after that, you're just struggling from day to day, just living in tents. Food wasn't all that good, because it can't be. How can you cater for so many children? And the latrine side of it wasn't very good. This is why cholera broke out. But I can assure you, it did break out, and the British people did not know a thing about it.
Were you sick yourself?
Well, I must have done, because I had a big chapter in air for the injection, the cure, you know, they want to call it. I got three in that arm, three there. They scratch your skin and put some stuff in. So I must have done, but I have not got clear, you know, feelings about it. I mean, I would have thought I'd be more interested in kicking a ball around the field, you know, than anything else. But no, I've got no more feelings on that side at all. And then from there, I went to Dudley, in Worcester. And the terrible part was, I think it's terrible, that they broke up the whole family. There were five boys and one girl. And they separated us. All the other families, like Cocke, who's a famous author, he is now. He won the laurels in America in the White House for the 50,000 applicants. He's an author and he's a very good artist. And he remembered because his brothers stayed together. We write to each other now, you see. Right?
So some families were kept together and
yes,
others were split
wasn't.
Up?
Ours wasn't. I did not. I went from home to home. I went to Dudley first in tents. I got a photo of me eating a loaf of bread with a tent behind me. I went to Liverpool. I went to Manchester. I was moved so many times. I didn't know I had a brother at all. As time goes by, you know, and I finished up in Carshalton in Surrey, which was my main memory, is Carshalton. It was a huge house, which the government lent us, and let us use. But we had to be self-supporting, not like today's, giving handouts. We were self-supporting. We have had 65 children. I've got a photo of all of them on a T-shirt, back indoors and outside on the steps. I just showed to your lady in the one with the red hair in the
Field
War Museum. And then they stayed together. We didn't. I didn't know until I went to Carshalton, and all of a sudden we had, every girl had to look after a boy, i.e. do the washing, the ironing, make sure he's smart. All the boys done the work in the gardens and grow vegetables too, because it saves buying them, right? We had a few chickens, loads and loads of vegetables, big garden it was, and we done that, and everybody had a chore to do as well before you go to school.
What was your chore?
My chore was the top dormitory, up top, and there was 8 beds in our dormitory. My chore was to sweep the dormitory, landing and staircase, wash them, like mop, you know, mop them, and then I could come down and have my breakfast and then walk a mile and a half to school. Walk a mile and a half lunchtime to come have a sandwich, and then walk a mile and a half back again to Carshalton school. Back in the evening, and then we had an hour Spanish lessons and an hour French lessons. I don't know why the French lessons, but I used to speak quite good French, but I forgot it. But and that was it. And then every things like you couldn't buy, you couldn't pay for, was electricity, and then we had to pay rates and everything else, but we had each had a foster parent in America, like you sponsor children in Afghanistan and you sponsor donkeys in somewhere else, don't we? We donate money to people to feed them. Well, my stepfather, adopted father, was a Harvard University lecturer, I didn't know at the time, but one day they said to me, your foster father's coming to England, he wants to meet you. I said, who? My foster father. He said, well, where am I going to meet him? He said, in London, in one of the hotels in Kensington it was. And so they borrowed this from a Canadian Red Cross some clothes for me so I could have it look smart, you know. I've never thought to me much toes up here, you know, and they're shooting the boots, you know. And they dressed me up and they took me into London and I did meet him in the, I think it was a Lancaster Gate Hotel or something, it was an afternoon tea dance, you know.
What was his name?
I couldn't tell you, honestly, I really couldn't. But I did meet him and we went upstairs and I thought, oh my goodness, scones and cream and jam, you know, it was fantastic. But then he came out with a bombshell to him and he said, Raimundo, my wife and my son, I've been discussing you, and we'd like you to come to live with us in America. We'll adopt you. And do you know what my reactions were? Oh, no, I'm not going to America. I'm not leaving my mate. I said, no, I can't leave my mate. And that had been made, you know. And he was in England. He was lecturing at Cambridge. You with me? And then, anyway, he went back and presumably just kept paying £1.10 a week for me. But one, this is the important part, one of our boys, his first stepfather was President Roosevelt, and he went to the White House, sent for him, and we came back with photographs sitting in the wheelchair with Roosevelt, and he brought presents for the children, you know, which was a famous contact sort of thing, you know, and that was the money that they paid for us. We paid for the rent, the electricity, and things that we couldn't use or grow, you follow me? And he said that I said the home functioned, and it functioned very, very well. One girl looks after one boy. We all have chores. A list in the hall. Now today's duties. Say back in peeling potatoes, Raimundo. You know, washing up, Antonio. No, there was a list every day. You had to have another chore, so the work would all get done, which is very well organized, really.
How old were you when you turned down this chance of going to America?
I must have been about 10, 11.
So the war had already started.
Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I don't want to leave my mates. So I couldn't leave my friends, you know. And I had another choice.
Another chance?
Yes, another chance. We were playing, it's not me, but the Spanish boys, the senior, older ones, like my brothers were playing football in London, like against like an amateur team, you know, playing against another sort of area. And I was shouting and cheering for them Spaniards, come on, boys, you know. And this woman kept looking at me, kept looking at that. And after, I was talking to her, you know, she's talking to me, and I'm with my mate, and we're cheering our side on, the Spaniards on, against the English boys, you know. And then I get back to the home, and then within a day or two, the head of the home contacted me, said, come on, I'll talk to you. He said, that lady you're talking to at the football matches, She lives, I've been to her house, I went to her house many times, can't think of the name, it's Twickenham. And she says she wants you to go for the weekend, you and bring a friend. So I took my friend with me, and we used to go there regular weekends. And her father, I can't even remember his name, but he was a squadron leader in the RAF. He never got killed, he came through it, and they lived in Wisbech, in Cambridgeshire. And they want him to go and live with them and adopt me, and I wouldn't leave my mates. Silly, not silly, because I'd have had a good life. And then, and the last address is 6 Water Beach something or other. I haven't contacted her because I just lost contact with them for so many years. You know, by now she must be sort of, I'm 70, so she must have been in the 80s, 85-ish. She was a young lady then, you see.
What were living conditions like in this house in Carshalton?
Oh, very hard but fair. Hard but fair. Everybody was 100% fit. You know, it's what we used to do, because we were within a quarter of a mile from Mallard's ammunition factory in Carshalton. There was Mallard's, was about a quarter of a mile down the road to our right. To our left, about a mile, was the British soldiers' hospital. And Jerry were trying to knock out Mallard's. We had a hell of a lot of air raids, but there's one part of it I remember distinctly. When the air raid went, everybody went to shelters, and I didn't. Me and my mates didn't. We stayed outside, and we had a dustbin lid with a sack, and we lived in a river. I got photos of the house. You can see the river runs in front of the house. We should wet a sack on there. And we should go out in the rain, and it goes shoo like that. And incendiary bombs, the only small ones, incendiary bombs. The Hitler was dropping a lot of incendiary bombs to create panic. And you would hit the ground, psh, it starts flaming. That's mine. And you'd run in with the jump and jump on it. With it don't explode. It just creates fires. And with a wet sack, you smother it. You know? And they pick it up. I said, that was mine. And I put it in the water. The next day, we'd pick it out of the water and go and sell it. You know, souvenirs. You know, souvenir, Mr. Thruppence, you know, in the fish and chip shop. That we used to do that. We used to go down and they got scrumping.
Did anybody get injured? No. With the incendiary bombs?
No. They're only about that long.
Foot and a half.
Yeah, and they just created fire. So you jump on them before the oxygen can get really, really going, and you put them out with a wet sack, and the main thing is the dustbin lid to smother it so no oxygen. Then we knew they wouldn't explode. We knew they wouldn't explode. And just, you know, create fires. And we should do quite a bit of that, actually. And just sell them for thrums. I remember selling mine in a fish and chip shop. And I said, souvenir, mister. How much do you want for it? He says, threepence. And of course, they look at you. You know, I said, yeah, give us threepence. And I went and bought a chicken with it. A baby chicken.
A chick?
A chick, yeah. And I took it back to the home. And I was in the upstairs dormitory, right, with my mates. And we used to feed this chicken with bits of scrap. And he was brought up in one of the drawers, like, you know, the clothes, you know. And where all of us, the heads didn't know how to chicken up then. It got bigger, and it got bigger, and it got bigger. And then, this is not a fairy tale, it's true. This chicken, it was too big for the drawers. You had to let him go. I was in charge of the dormitory, don't forget, and the landing. So nobody else had reason to go up there. We used to let the chicken run around the dormitory, you see. And it got bigger. One day, I came home from school. And my mate says to me, or Creo, his name was, he's going to get ears paralysed in one hand. And he said, Raimundo, your chicken's not in the dormitory. I said, what are you about? He says, it's not there, it's gone. And he had gone. And what had happened, that one of the masters had found the chicken, and they took it. So when I complained, started crying and raving, I said, where is my chicken? And one of the other lads, older than me, said, Raimundo, you want your chicken? They've eaten it. There's nothing wrong with chicken, you know, but they ate it. And they had, this is absolutely true, they had a goose in the garden shed where they were fattening for Christmas. And I was so annoyed, so upset. And my mate Angel, he's dead now, I said, well, I'm not going to get away with this. Come, we went down to the garden, and there's this lovely white goose. I said, Angel, hold his body. I'll get the neck and wring his neck. Well, we were turning, going one way, I'm going the other way. And you couldn't wring his neck. You couldn't. He was such a hard animal. And I was determined to get my own back. And we happened to be in the woodshed. And I said, Achim, hold him tight and put his head on that block there. You know where they chop the wood. And he did. And I got to chop and cut his head off. Oh, my God, did I? Was I in trouble after that? I said, you killed my chicken, I'll kill your goose. I was forbidden to go out of the house, the home, for 3 months when we got to school. I was no pocket money, no goodies at all, for 3 solid months because I killed the goose. And I kept protesting, you killed my chicken, you know. And this is all the boys at the home remember this. You know, I was a terrible boy, I was.
Who were the people in charge of the house?
They were all Spanish. The top man was called Pepe. And he didn't fight in the war as such because he had a club foot, you know, but he's a very, very fair man. And then the girls, the senior girls, would look after us. There's a girl who looks after each boy, you see. We also had another way of avoiding bullies there because if you were bullying, you picked on me, being a lot smaller, and they found out that you'd beaten me up, they would get you into the main hall with a boy bigger than you, with boxing gloves. The whole school, the whole colony, would watch you get in a good hiding until you give in. And that would stop bullying. even at a court, if you immediately stole anything, you would be tried by us, you know. It was very well run considering the days, you know. And we were, there was a lady in London in Victoria Street by the name of Miss Picken. You may come across that, Miss Picken, English lady, and she used to organise everything for all the refugees, you know, in Victoria Street. I can't remember the number. I did go up there once to see her.
So what was the address of this house in Carshalton?
The Culvers, Culvers Avenue, Carshalton, Surrey. There's a road called the Culvers Avenue from the town. But down Culvers Avenue is the hill, and on the bottom, on the right-hand side, there was a nursery that grows, what do they call it, that you eat?